بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. At the time of corruption, people have the tendency to ask, what is the solution? There's problems at home. If you go out into the street, there's problems there. If you outside the masjid, there's problems there. Someone is talking of something that is not right, doing something that is incorrect. Or someone is using bad languages. He's not fair in his dealings and ways. So whether you go in the shop, you'll find that. Whether you're at home, you'll find this. Whether you're outside the masjid, you'll find the same thing. So as though man is covered with so many trials, so many problems, complications. Now in all that complication, what is the solution? What is the way out? What is the exit? How do you get out of it? There's two ways of reasoning. One is, now we're caught up in this problem, let's carry on with life now. Let's take the day as it comes. We're not like the Sahaba, and nor can we be like the great Awliya. Life needs to carry on, continue. So that is one way of reasoning. But this is an incorrect way of reasoning. It leads you to greater problems thereafter. Today, if the problem is single, tomorrow it will be compounded. Today, if it is a small snake that is still inside its shell, tomorrow it will hatch out into a python. Then it will be out of control. Today, if the cancer is small and you've checked it on time through some chemo or some type of therapy, you can eliminate it. Right? And tomorrow, when it's gone out of control, it's spread into the entire body, it's gone on to the vital organs, then they say it's too late now. It's gone to the vital organs, it's gone into your blood, it's gone into your brain. Now it's just a matter of time, and go home, enjoy yourself. So the logical thing to do is to find out what is the solution at the initial stages. Initial beginning stages, primary stages. This is a problem, I'm covered up with a problem, what do I do? In my business, things are not working out right. I can see there's a deep decline in the business. Everything is falling apart. What do I do? Okay. Now, to work haphazardly without reasoning, that is not the system of Allah Ta'ala. You use your reasoning, your understanding. Don't fall deeper into a problem. One person in Johannesburg, some 10 years ago, when the dollar was very strong, 14, I think, hit up to $14 a dollar. So he had some shares in the stock market, and the shares are going very well for him. It's going very, very well. Double and treble, going four times, five times. It was just soaring up all the way. So now he thought to himself that this is the right time. So he mortgaged his house, he got the cash and he invested it. I said, no, I mortgaged the house, I got another half a mil, let me invest it. And then that market came crashing. See, that market is also like a seesaw. investments also are like seesaws. One day it's for you, one day it's against you. One friend comes here sometimes. He says he was doing very well, very, very well. In the millions he was. Last he came. He came to visit me. So he says, I think went right down, crashed. We had millions, now I have about 50 rands. So this person went and mortgaged his house, he took the cash and he put it into that investment. The whole market crashed. He's got no house to live in because the bank repossessed the house. He can't service those installments that he has to service. He can't do it. So not to reason correctly and just to do anything that comes to the mind, irrational. Allah doesn't want you to do this. Use your mind, use your discretion, understand. And don't only think for the short term, think for the short long term as well. Now this person didn't keep this contingency in mind. This can also happen today if the market is very strong. Tomorrow it can come crashing down. So he didn't keep it in mind. It came crashing down. He's got no house to live in. Where he had a nice freehold property, peace of the mind, he was comfortable. That greed had the better over him, and the whatever little he had, all was gone. Then you have one class of people, you see. Talking of people now. They aren't prepared to accept their own mistakes. If anything, any problem comes, they're confronted with any situation, they don't have the heart to accept their mistakes. They say, no, this person, he put the spanners in the works. This person was the cause. Yeah, he is spiteful, and because of his jealousy is what has happened. I was on the way of progress, and this person came, and he put the spanners, and see now, I've fallen down. So it's a class of people who do not wish to accept mistakes. But now, you need to be man enough, you need to understand that I have to continue with my life. Life needs to continue. Whether I throw the blame on someone else, or I accept that blame, but my life needs to continue. There can be one of two situations. One is really, that person caused the problem for me. So next time I don't listen to him. But I go on singing the same stories. Oh, that's not right. See? There was one suicide case. So, the girl's father, girl who had committed suicide, now he comes to me. He normally doesn't come, but two times, three times he came. So he says, he tried to justify himself. No, my girl was like a farishta, like an angel. She would never do such a thing. And the husband led her on to this. Now what do you get? What do you get out of this? You don't get anything out of this. There may be one of several problems. It may be that it was not a correct type of guidance that you had given your daughter. Now this culminated, it ended in this way. Right? That is one possibility. Right? It may be that she is mentally deficient. Right? It may be a problem within herself, or with you, or with her mother. So the right thing to do is correct yourselves. Your side of the whole story, you correct it. And say for instance, after some deliberating and going and throwing your story in the marketplace everywhere, people begin to feel that you are justified. What have you earned? You have earned only the sympathies of people. You can still not say that in the court of Allah Ta'ala, in the presence of Allah Ta'ala, you are innocent. Can you say that? That people bought your story and they accepted it for whatever you had said. But can you say now that that story that I have given, that will hold in the court of Allah Ta'ala, therefore I am innocent? So then what is the use of this exercise? The right thing now is look forward now. The mistake happened. Whatever happened, happened. Now let's look ahead. Why this thing happened? let's correct ourselves. So this is one section of the community that cries for sympathy all the time, looks for self-pity, self-sympathy. So you don't get anywhere. Think positive, think constructive, and continue. One Maulana came here, so he says, his wife complains that she was ill-treated like this by her uncle and her masaji and fala, fala, fala. She was ill-treated and she cries away. So I explained to the Maulana, you don't ever buy that story of your wife, but don't reprimand her. When she's in that state of gloominess, then don't reprimand her, but don't buy the story. There are some people that cry for sympathy, they cry for self-pity. Now if you will buy the story, what's going to happen? Whenever you will meet that relative of hers, you will look at them negatively. Alright, this was that masaji, this was that chacha, this was that mama, who looked towards his niece in an incorrect way. He ill-treated her, he hit her, he abused her somehow, mentally, traumatized her, whichever, whatever. So you will always look at that mamaji or that chacha or that masaji, you will look at him negatively. You don't need to do that. Right? You need, after she's cooled down and she's relaxed, now make her think constructively. You make her think like this, that perhaps, see, someone reprimanded you, someone shouted you. Maybe they felt that you were wrong. Maybe you went wrong, but they felt that you were wrong. And in all that exercise, they were trying to rectify you. But now look at your own side. They reprimanded you, they shouted you. So haven't you become more cautious? You have become more cautious. You have become more careful of yourself. So overall, aren't you still the winner? You're the winner now. So be happy. You must be happy now. Think positive, think constructive. When you can think rightly, you can take work out of shaitan also. Really, you can put him into your employ and you can take work out of him as well. Why must you think negative? Hazrat Junaid Rahmatullah Alayh, he saw one person being crucified. So he inquired, what happened? So this person he stole for the first time, so they chopped off his one hand. Then he stole for the second time, they amputated his foot. Now he's going over the limit, so they thought of crucifying him. But let's finish this person up, close this chapter up. He continued 4 times, 5 times, 6 times, getting on stealing all the time, and he's getting caught, he's getting punished, and he's stealing again, getting punished and going to steal again. So Junaid al-Baghdadi rahmatullahi alayhi went and kissed his feet. And he says, I'm not kissing the feet of a thief, but I'm kissing the feet of one who's got istiqamat. He's so firm in his ways. See, the thing that he is living for, the thing that he cherishes, the thing that he adores, he's so firm on it. So can you see now, an enemy also, you can make business out of that enemy. He's an enemy, but you can make him to do your business. So we don't think like businessmen many a times. Sometimes we'll find some person is giving a wrong type of publicity against your shop, right? No, he's like this and like this. So really sometimes it works out as an advertisement. He's giving negative publicity up your shop. Now people say, yeah, hey, we didn't know you were existing. So now you exist, now let's go and buy from you. So you would actually thank that enemy of yours, that opposition of yours. He gave the publicity, people came to check up, they came and bought. So why don't we learn to think positively? Why we always think negative, negative, negative? Well, Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah was in the company of one person. He had some ta'alluq with a great buzurg. Great buzurg. And he says, oh, you know what? Hazrat Ji Mua Masihullah Sahab and Mua Inamul Hasan Sahab, falan falan, all these buzurgs, and this person ran him down, and this person said this, and this person said this about this buzurg. He had some taluk with the great buzurg who passed away many years ago, 1930s, 40s, he passed away. His sheikh passed away then. So he had taluk with that buzurg. So Mufti Rahmatullah heard him out. And then he asked him, but didn't you spend some time with the Shaykh al-Hadith also? He said, yes, I spent some time with the Shaykh al-Hadith as well. So he asks him, but those days that you stayed in the company of the Shaykh rahmatullahi alayhi, did you ever hear him speaking anything wrong? Did you ever hear him saying anything wrong about anybody? He says, no. So Mustafa asked him, what type of contagious cancer this is? That those people that are hurling abuse, they become worthy of imitating. They become worthy of being emulated. You're speaking about them. That he said this about this buzurg, and he said this about this buzurg. So you're quoting all that evil, all that wrong propaganda, you're quoting it. You lived here sometimes with the Shaykh, although you didn't have any taluk, but you stayed with him. For whatever reason, for barakat, whatever, you lived with him. But in all that duration, you didn't find him speaking out wrong against anybody. He didn't hurl abuse, he didn't insult, he didn't run down, he didn't despise anybody. So isn't he worthy of emulation? That person who is worthy, that person that is hurling abuse, he is worthy of emulation. That person who is respectful, he doesn't talk ill about anybody, he does not despise and run down anybody, he is not worthy of emulation. So how is your brain gone upside down? Then Mufti Rahmatullah explained to him that one person used to come to us, Shaykh al-Hadith rahmatullahi alayhi, and he was clean shaven. Another Shaykh rahmatullahi didn't tell him anything. So straight away now, he jumped to conclusion. Straight away. So he says, Meto isku khyanat samajhta hun. I consider this as a treachery, an act of treachery. Ke talib aapke paas aata hai aur aap unko sahi rehnumai nahi karte. When that person is coming out to search Allah Ta'ala and you don't guide him correctly, so I consider it as an act of treachery, of deception. So Mufti Rahmatullah explained to him. The idea is not to score points against anybody and to push anybody down. See? That's not the idea. The idea is reformation, correction. And when that's the whole theme, the whole idea, the whole purpose, the whole goal is to make Islah and reformation and correction, then what do you need to do it straight away? Do you need to chop the person straight away? Bang him straight away on the head when he comes to you type this haram. Is that the correct approach? See, so people don't understand these things. They don't understand these things. Buzugana Deen have different approaches with different people. Now this person that is speaking to him is a great person, alim also, and he's got taluk with some great senior ulama that Buzugana passed away around that time, 1940s. Right? And now he says that I consider this act of the Shaykh Ramadai as an act of treachery, as an act of deception. Why didn't he correct him straight away? So Mufti Rahmatullah says that, why do you jump to conclusions like this? Wait and see now how this person dealt with this person. How this buzurg, how Shaykh Ramadai dealt with this person. He says then, after him coming to the Shaykh Ramadai for some time, he built up a type of acquaintance with the Shaykh Ramadai. Some familiarity. He took bi'at, and now he's a five-time namazi, he's performing tahajjud, he's got nice sunnah, let alone bi'at, his clothing, everything is in accordance to sunnah. His business, all the haram that he was doing, everything he left out. See? So these buzurgana deen also do amar bil ma'roof. They also enjoin the good. They also forbid the evil. But then, they will see what is the appropriate occasion. They will not do it just straight away. They won't just do it at any time and in any way. If you don't understand the delicate nature of the Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, sometimes the consequence that can come out can be even worse. You will think within yourself, no, I have done my duty. You will think within yourself, I have done my duty. But really you haven't done your duty. Sometimes your intention is corrupt. See, there can be two people. One person is clean shaven, and you'll shout him and you'll reprimand him. And the next person, you will not tell him anything. Then you go and examine within yourself, but this person you reprimanded, and that person you spoke to him in a loving, kind, respectable way. What was the reason? No, this person, I got a business ta'alluq with him. I get special deals, you know. He's my business partner. I can see I'm getting some benefit out of him. This person is a stranger. Whether he comes to me, he doesn't come to me, whether he severs the relationship or not. So I'm not really concerned about it. But I'm doing my duty. If not fully, I'm doing it half, at least I'm doing it on him. So see, the intention is corrupt. The intention is really to guard that business. Right? And this relationship that you need to have with a Muslim is disregarded. The business relationship you respect, and the dini relationship is disregarded, you see. So these adverse effects sometimes come about when we do not know procedure, we do not know how to do it, and we go and just do things. That's why Hazrat Muhammad Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah says, when that wrong approach is being used, then if any wrong comes out thereafter, then the one that was trying to rectify, he also becomes sinful. He's in Thanabon. One Hafiz Sahib used to come to the masjid. So one day, he spoke a little louder in the masjid than he's supposed to. So another person came and rectified him. But he rectified him in this way. Yeah, you think you're Hafiz now, you're too great, you can speak loudly in the masjid. So he spoke to him in this manner. So that Hafiz Sahib stopped coming to the masjid. So Hazrat said that not coming to the masjid, ye to ek bewakufi hai. The masjid has got no fight with you. The masjid has no fight with you. There was no reason for you to leave the masjid. The fight was with that person, not with the masjid. But as it says, with that, just as this person who left coming out of the masjid, he is sinful, then the person who admonished him in that way also is sinful. See? So this approach of Amar bil Ma'ruf, that many of us have it, this person is kafir, don't read namaz behind this person here. Every small thing now, kafir, kafir, kafir. This is not the approach, not the style of Abu Sugaraddin. Whoever is doing it, whether he's an alim or whoever, but it is not the style of Abu Sugaraddin. Okay? To run down people, to use labels, that was not the Abu Sugaraddin style. Not their way. Where did you see Hazrat Ji Rahmatullahi Al-Mu'ad Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah using labels? La tanabazu bil alqab. Don't call people by nicknames. Did you ever see them doing it? No, they didn't do it. That's the clear injunction of the Quran. Don't call people by labels. Yeah, their whole theme and their whole outlook was how to make the person a Muslim, to remain, that he must remain a Muslim. The theme was not to take him out of Islam. The theme was not to label him, but the theme was to somehow show that he is a Muslim. Somehow to prove that he is a Muslim. Hazrat Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi, he advised his son Hammad that I don't advise you to go into debates. So his son Hammad says, but Hazrat, you attend debates, you debate with people, why do you stop us from debating? So Imam Sahib Rahmatullah explained that when we enter into a debate, we enter with this frame of mind, that somehow, by accident, by mistake, some right word may come out from the tongue of the opposition, for which I can say he's a Muslim. Some wrong word, mistakenly say something, and I'll have a reason to say that, no, this person is a Muslim. But now you check within your heart, when you're debating with someone, what's the frame of mind? The frame of mind somehow must prove that he's a kafir. Right? Now you think for yourself that when you're debating, and that's the frame of your mind, you are eager, you are aspiring, that some word of kufr must come out from his tongue so that you can label him. What is tumhara iman ka kya thikana hai? You are longing for this. You are aspiring for this, that some word of disbelief must come out from the tongue of the opposition so that you can stamp him, you can label him, he's a kafir, he's a fasik, whatever it is. So you see how these people thought. So going into a mission of kufr, fasik, fajir, and labeling people, that was not the style of Abu Zukanuddin. It is not the way of the Quran Sharif. The way of Abu Zukanuddin was somehow to gather the people together. The founder of Darulum Dioban, Hazrat Muhammad Qasim Sahib Nanutwi Rahmatullahi, his approach was very, very gentle, but in matters of Islam, he was firm, quite firm. There he wouldn't compromise. He had to come to Delhi for some work. His khadim, Mawlana Ahmad Hassan Amrohi, and there was another khadim, Amir Shah Khan Sahib. So both these were khadims. Khadim means they were students. When you say khadim, you mean the students, but they offered to do that khidmat. So they had taken, they had booked an inn, and Hazrat Nanuti Sahib Rahmatullahi was on one bed, and on the other side of the room, these two students are sitting there. And they're discussing amongst themselves that we are in this street in Delhi, on this road in Delhi, and we can't be performing namaz in the masjid that is in the neighborhood. Because he's a jahil. These are the words he used. He's a jahil. And he hurls abuse against our Hazrat. So we can't go and perform namaz behind him. Right? Our Hazrat Mawlana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullahi overheard this. Now look, I'm going to show you the frame of mind, how they thought. How they reasoned. Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullahi is relating this incident. How did they look at things? What this person was doing, he was hurling abuse against Abu Zukanuddin, Abu Kabir, talking about them in a very insulting way. They are kafirs, they are like this, like this, like this, whatever. So Mawlana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullahi says that you are a jahil. He's telling his student that was doing his khidmat. You are a jahil and you're saying that Imam Sahib is jahil. Really, from within my heart, I consider this person to be a buzrug. And the dalil, the proof for him being a buzrug is that perhaps he had found out that I am involved in some wrong. Though it was misinformation, the information that reached him was wrong, right? But according to what he had received, he felt that I was wrong. And then he thought it as a duty to correct me. So he spoke about it. Though the right procedure was to go and investigate. But what was the thing that spurred him up? The thing that spurred him up was that information about me, that I am wrong. Right? So that spurred him up to speak in the manner that he spoke. So now he was doing his duty of Amar bil Ma'ruf, of enjoying the right. Okay? So that makes me feel that this person is a buzrug. That he's so firm on Amar bil Ma'ruf, his dini values are so strong, therefore he stands up to rectify me in this manner. And tomorrow for Fajr, we are going to that same masjid. Now you see the outlook. There's no compromising in truth, but in the same token, there's no sectarian. making up groups, feeling that the truth is confined to what you say, it's wrong. This is not the right way. This is what's happening now presently, that each person feels that the truth is confined to whatever I say. So this was not the style at all, but not the way of Abu Zughan al-Din. Abu Zughan al-Din's outlook was totally different. Totally different. One istifta had come to Dioban. The khulasa, the essence of the questioner was that this person went to a tobacconist. You know, in India you'll have pan shop. Every here and there you'll have a pan shop. And the pan shop is selling tobacco as well. So the customer says, I want some tobacco, but a strong tobacco. So he shows him one strong one. He says, no, usset is. I want something even stronger. Better kick it's got. So he gives him something stronger. He says, no, something even stronger. This is still 2 miles. Something even better, more strong. So when he saw that this person wants something very strong, so he got the strongest one. So now, usset is. No, he says, no, usset is, bas khuda ka naam. Usse zyada karwa, what he said? Usse zyada karwa khuda ka naam. Now the questioner came to the Dioban, to the madrasa. This person say, usse zyada karwa khuda ka naam. Uska iman ka thikana kya hai? It was one of our ulama, what's happening now is, you know, very quickly writing, here, he's a kafir, and he's a fajir, and he's like this. No, Mufti Ahmad didn't do this. Now imagine he is sitting in a position as Darulum Dioban, whose fatwas are scrutinized by all the ulama in the whole of India and Pakistan at that time, 1930s, 40s, 50s. All people like Mohammad Thamir, everybody's alive. And this fatwa is coming here. So how cautious you have to be that so many people are going to see your fatwa, right? It's going to be approved by so many people, or it's going to be rejected. So Musa says, no, this person is not a kafir actually. He is not a kafir. And the proof for him not being a kafir is that in tobacco, the thing that is sought for, the thing that is sought for is how strong it is, right? So that is a symbol of perfection in tobacco, how strong it is. Right? An indication of perfection is how strong it is. Looking at Stuyvesant or 2 Mile. Huh? Or Lexington, or that's a man's cigarette. Boxer, or the one that's got a real power in it, right? Understand? So that is what is sought for. And what is sought for is sort of the perfection in that particular thing, in that particular commodity. This is the sign of perfection. So when he said, usse zyada karwa khuda ka naam, more bitter than that is the name of Allah Ta'ala, he meant that the most perfect is Allah Ta'ala. You can't get anything more perfect. The most perfect is Allah Ta'ala. This is what he meant. And really, if you go and analyze it, this is what he meant, really. He really meant it. Now, Mufti Ahmad is so cautious of trying to save this person's iman. Now, some look at it in retrospect, now how you will just dish out kufr. Oh, he's kafir. Don't read namaz behind him. Don't do this. So here koi Islam hai kya? Is this Islam? This is not Islam. This is something else that you are selling now. This is something else. The important thing is to see our Abu Zughan al-Din. If we can't see them, then at least read their books. See how they worked. How they respected each other. How they tried to save up, cover up. See? How they behaved, how they conducted amongst themselves. And if there is a failure in seeing this, then what will happen is, we'll lose confidence in everybody and anybody. And we will confine the truth to ourselves. We'll have that attitude, holier than thou. Now, we are best, but everybody else we will despise. Every other person we will run down. See? And overall what will happen, the rest of the ummah will be spectators. Yeah, see these people, how they're fighting. Wearing kurtas and all that, got beards, but see how they're fighting amongst themselves. in Delhi, there is a Jalsa. And Hussein Ahmad Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi, who is the Sadr and the President of the Jamiat, he is supposed to be addressing the Jalsa in Delhi. And Mawla has to come, he'll get a massive crowd, you know, massive audience. Mawla Asad Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi called for a public gathering, you know, about 2 years or 3 years before he passed away, when the government had passed some laws that masjids cannot be built. Masjids cannot be built. Whatever is there is there. Any new masjid that has to be built, then they have to be approved by the central government. Delhi will approve of it, you see. Any religious site. In the meanwhile, what it meant, that any temple will get approval, but masjid won't get approval. Everything will come to the central government. So temple or church will get the approval of the central government, masjid will not get the approval. So Mawla should have been in defense. And his defense was, he called for a public meeting. So in about 3 days, he advertised it, and there was a crowd of approximately 500,000 people. The government got shaken up, and they had to retract. Understand? They had to retract. So he, as well as his father, were very, very acceptable people. They did a lot of work. The defense of Islam, whichever way they could do, they did it. And when you're doing a high profile work, you'll have some mistakes also. So you don't keep looking at the man's mistakes and the weaknesses. Look at what he's done. Now that man didn't do this work here, one more masjid would not have been built in India. Whereas hundreds of people, thousands of people accepting Islam, like here in our community as well, new areas are opening up, so you need new masjids. Compare ourselves 30 years ago and now, how many new masjids came up? Population is always increasing, multiplying. So you can imagine now what crowds Mawla Hussein Ahmad Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi must have been drawing. So on the one section, Mawla is attracting a big, huge audience. Mawla has just come onto the stage to deliver his lecture, and he hears that Mawla Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi has also got a jalsa. His jalsa will be called an ishtima, a crowd, a gathering, right? If a tabligh gathering, they'll call it an ishtima. Non-tabligh gathering, will call it a jalsa. But both are ishtimas, right? Different names, but it's the same thing. And Mawla Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi, he's about to address the audience, and he also hears that Mawla Hussein Ahmad Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi is addressing an audience. See? Now public sentiments, see, public sentiments, how public things. And this is what these people had in mind, that we need to unite the ummah, not to break the ummah. If I'm going to have a jalsa here, and Mawla is going to have a jalsa there, then people will ultimately think that we can break them up. Or they are breaking up, you see, he's doing his own thing that side, and he is doing his thing on this side. So they are broken up. Now, imagine that whole jalsa was all arranged for Mawla Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi to address that crowd. And this whole jalsa, this istima was arranged, Mawla Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi was to come and address that crowd. But Mawla Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi announces in his crowd, and Mawla Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi announces in his crowd that the jalsa has been called off and we are going to Mawla Ilyas's place. Mawla Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi announces that the istima is called off, we are going to Mawla Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi's place. The jalsa is called off this side, the istima is called off this side, both are meeting midway. Now, that whole sentiment, the whole feeling was different. So the crowds in both places, what they felt, that the jamiat and istima is same, one and the same thing. They are not two different camps. The istima and the Jamiat, both are one and the same camp. They are not two different things. So this outlook and this thinking of the Buzurgan Adeem has to be acquired. And why I say we have to acquire it is we know how they behaved. Situations will come about, changing situations, conflicts, problems, difficulties, all type of things will come. someone is abusing, someone is insulting, someone is passing some type of message. But in the wake of all that, how did they conduct themselves? How Abu Sufyan ad-Din conducted themselves? That is important. That is what we need to understand. How did they conduct themselves? Did they look for ways to bring harmony and unity into the ummah, or they allowed the ummah to break down and to collapse even further? What was the outlook? How did they look at things? So until and unless we don't read their stories, we don't read their kitabs, their biography, etc., we cannot understand this. So this article Mustafa Ramtai is speaking about, as though this article is exclusive for the people of Etikaf. This person says, he asks, Man Najat, what is the way out? You know, you say way out, there's problems everywhere. You go out, there's problems here, in the shopping area, there's problems. You go into the office, there's a problem. You go into the airport, there's a problem. People are not dressed correctly. So your eyes are falling everywhere and anywhere. You're going into the street, there's some music blasting. You come home, there's some problem there as well. Child wants to see television, and the mother is supporting it, and here, I don't want to do it. What do I do? So from all sides you are covered up with fitna and with problems. From all sides you are covered with problems. What do you do in that situation? So Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has given three pieces of advice. One is Amlik alayka lisanak. He didn't say Imlik alayka lisanak. He didn't say that, you know, let your tongue control you. Rather, he says, Amlik alayka lisanak. You be in control of your tongue. You know, like a horse, you are in control of it. Move here, don't move here. You stop here, you pick up the speed here, you reduce the speed here. You take a turn here, you take a turn there. See? So, you be in control of your tongue. Don't let it be that your tongue is in control of you. Rather, you be in control of your tongue. Amlik alayka lisanak. That is the first advice Rasulullah is giving. In India, you have this situation. Every now and then, there will be a curfew. If there is communal rights or there is some problem, then they will announce a curfew. And everybody is to remain in the house. If they find anybody, they shoot on sight. No warning, and they just see you, they shoot you on sight. So similarly, there is problems everywhere. See, that's why the hadith says, there will be fitnas, there will be problems. The one that is lying down will be better than the one that is sitting. And the one that is fast asleep is better than the one that is lying down. And the one that is sitting is better than the one that is walking. مَنْ تَشَرَّفَ إِلَيْهِ إِسْتَشْرَفَهُ. You just look towards it, that fitna will just draw you towards itself. You just go as a spectator, as a bystander. You just go and observe. And there that fitna will take you, it will draw you, it will pull you in, it will rope you in. You will not be able to withstand the force and the current in the fitna. The current in the fitna is so powerful that it will drag you towards itself. You will not be able to resist. Now look at the fitnas that are around. You can't resist. You'll find so many youngsters will come Ramadan, especially, and before, after Ramadan also. You know, I got that cell phone, I slipped into a wrong thing. Ramadan and I did this now. What is the tawbah? What do I do? I fell into it. It's so easy to slip into it. It's so easy. That fitna is available on call. Whenever you call for it, the fitna is available. It's so easy. On the one hand, you cannot say that you can do away with the cell phone. It's become such a necessity. Although 10 years ago, it was not a necessity at all. But now you can't do without it. So the easy way, in my understanding, to secure yourself against that fitna is to buy a basic phone, just where you can dial, where you can phone, or you can receive a message. That's all. all the other features just eliminated. For the safety of your own iman, or anybody else's iman, then you eliminate everything else, just the basic features. The message, to receive a message, or to be able to pass on a message. Otherwise, anybody can slip on. Anybody can fall in. You're idle now, you've got nothing to do. The roza is long, 12, 13 hours. The time has to pass. You want some excitement, something to entertain you. Everybody wants some entertainment. Now, how to get that entertainment? You can't eat, you can't drink. And sleep also, you sleep. And hunger, when you're hungry, you can't get the sleep also. So what to do? How to get yourself entertained? So you start viewing. And it's so exciting that 1 hour, 2 hours, 5 hours can just pass and you're just watching. And all, every type of haram, you watched it. So, uski, uska roza kis tarah se salamat reh sakta hai. There's so many youngsters that will come and tell you, Ramadan roza, I broke. I had to break it. I was watching this and I broke it. See? So that there's fitnas, the forces of the fitnas are so such that he's saying, man istashrafa ilay, man tasharrafa ilay istashrafa. You just look towards it. That thing will draw you, it will pull you towards itself. This cell phone is one real example. You just look towards it, and the way it will rope you in, that you can't come out of the web. Both figuratively and literally. You can't get out of the web. So how do you save yourself? Nabi Salam is saying, first, take care, you control your tongue. You be in control of your tongue. Tongue is such an important thing. When you get up in the morning, then the entire body, it pleads to the tongue. You straighten up and it will be straight, will be secure. Imagine now, the tongue does the wrong, but the entire body catches it. Wrong who did? Kone galati karta hai, kiska kusur hai, aur kone mar khata hai? The tongue's wrong, the tongue's mistake, and the whole body must catch it for that. So the whole body pleads to the tongue that you straighten up and we will be straight. You may have never heard a case where the tongue did the wrong and someone pulled the tongue and hit the tongue. Never heard the case. Tongue is always scot-free. It gets out of every problem. The whole body catches it because of the wrongs, the discrepancies of the tongue, mistakes of the tongue. Rasulullah was advising, perhaps it was Mu'adh ibn Jabal radiallahu anhu, and he spoke to him about the various virtuous deeds, namaz, how great it is, and sadaqah, tutfi'u ghadab al-rab, sadaqah, it extinguishes the anger of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and sawm and fasting is like a shield, and jihad, dhirwatu sinamihi, the highest, the pinnacle of Islamic progress and achievement is jihad. So everything Rasulullah is advising Mu'adh ibn Jabal radiallahu anhu. And then he asks him, Ala adulluka ala milaki dhalika kullihi. As I show you something that will be able to guard all these works. Milak, milak actually means something, some adhesive, you know, something that will put everything together. It will combine, it will protect, it will take care of everything. Like how you have glue and gets everything together. Or cement everything together. See, the bricks and that cement will get everything together. Something that will cement everything together. So he said, yes, do show me. So Rasulullah says, this tongue, look after your tongue. So in astonishment, he asks Rasulullah, you are asking me to look after this? You're asking me to be particular about this? So Rasulullah says him, woe unto you. When you say woe, it doesn't mean destruction always. See, it also means sometimes when you say woe, you know, it's such a simple thing. Why don't you understand? You know how we say such a simple thing. Why can't you understand? So he says, do you know that many people will be dragged into Jahannam on account of the misdeeds of their tongues? يُكَبُّ النَّاسُ عَلَى وُجُوهِمْ إِلَّا حَصَائِدُ أَلْسِنَتِهِمْ. they'll be dragged into Jahannam just on account of the misdeeds, the misdemeanors of the tongue. You went and made ghibat this side here, you went and made gossiping here, you spoke a lie here, you gave a false story on this end, you broke up and severed relationship this side, there you hurled abuse, you insulted someone, you despised someone, you were unfair to someone. So all these things, they parcel you up and throw you, dispatch you to Jahannam. So this tongue is such a serious thing. Like the tongue is serious, the pen is even more serious. People feel they take the pen very lightly. Whereas I feel that the pen is even worse than the tongue. Ah, ihdal lisanin, one tongue and one way of conveying message is the tongue. And the other way is the pen. And I feel that the pen is even worse than the tongue. Because the abuse of the pen remains. You can store it up for 20 years, 50 years, 100 years you can store it up for. What you said, it's spoken of and it's vanished. There's no evidence of it. Finished, gone. And what you have written down, there's evidence for it. It's stored up. It's stored up. Ihdal lisanin. That's why Az Mu'attani Sabrandai says, it's not for everybody to write. People that have that level of understanding, that level of outlook, the outlook is right, that level of understanding, they have that type of wisdom, they should be writing. Now someone learned writing, and he's got a flowery language, he's got a command over the language, and you are just reading his article or just writing, he's writing articles? No, that's not the style. You must have wisdom, understanding, intellect, what is to be said, which time it is supposed to be said, which time it is not supposed to be said. Is this investigated? Do you research this thing here? And without investigating, without researching it, without understanding it, the consequence, anything, and you just go and give, you just give vent to all the information that you receive, you'll cause greater harm. In one town, the imam that was appointed to perform the namaz was illegitimate. Right? But he was an alim, doing a good job, people loved him, respected him. And there were just two or three people in the town, the entire town, that knew that he was illegitimate. We'll say harami. Gujarati, sometimes you're scolding your child, bo arami che. Not right to say that. Bo arami che. What you arami che? Your own child is bo arami che. Very illegitimate. How can you say that? Very illegitimate. Your own child. So just two, three people knew about it. Everybody else was unaware of it. So one bright spark, when he heard about it, you know, that the Imam Sahib is an illegitimate, so he prepared a questioner. The respected Mufti Sahib, please answer the following question. May Allah Ta'ala reward you. Our Imam is a very learned person. He's a pious person. He's liked in the community. And there is no one equal to him in learning, in righteousness, in virtue, whatever. But the only snag is that he is illegitimate. Is our namaz right? Is he the most suitable person to appoint as the imam in our community? Right? Mufti Sahib, whichever Mufti Sahib it was, he gave the answer that he is the most suitable person. In spite of the deficiency, whatever it is, but he is the most suitable candidate for that position. Anyway, this person received that answer. Now he made copies of that fatwa and circulated in the entire town. So now people must respect the Imam Sahib. Why are they disrespecting him? They must respect him. You know, he is the most capable person. Jahan ek do aadmi ko iski tila thi, ab puri dunya ko iski khabar ho gayi. One, two people had to know about it, was sufficient. They knew how to handle that information. Now the whole world is singing about it. So this information and news is not for everybody. They don't know how to disseminate information. He was doing a good job. There was peace in the town. There was no problem in the town. But now you don't know how to disseminate news. And you can publicize things that you're not supposed to publicize. What happens? where that whole peaceful, good community, rich, you know, in their values, in their ways, they have got rich values, you know, good values, but the whole value has collapsed, broken down. Obviously, the Imam Sabah will just pack up and leave. So how are people going to watch me? And they'll find out now which woman, you know, my so-called father, which woman my so-called father had some relationship with, or which woman mothered me, or which was a man that fathered me. And the whole controversy will carry on. So I'd rather leave the town. So this protection, this securing the tongue, and as I say, tongue doesn't only refer to this tongue, it also refers to the pen. The damage that can be done by the pen, the damage that can be done by the pen, by the tongue, very disastrous. But it's a misfortune that this is the sin that we treat lightest. We just come pass our tongue, pass our mind, and we say it, like as though it was a fly that sat on the nose, and we just pushed it aside. I always think of our brother Salih Ismail Bhai, who passed away. They say one of the salient qualities he had, if anybody was making ghibat, he'll say them once, this is not the right thing. And if they continue, then he'll get up respectfully and move away. Allah wala people, isn't it? One time he warned them, alright. He did his duty. His friends, whoever it was, acquaintance. The second time, then he says, no. Now these people are not paying attention. So I need to look after myself. More than them, I need to look after myself. So respectfully, in a dignified manner, he leaves. So many problems he saved himself from. Allah Ta'ala grants his people such a good death also. What good dreams people have after he passed away. Sahaba or Nabi, someone is coming to receive him. But then do you see the type of difficulty that he went through? It's a circle of friends, such a, you know, joyous occasion. And then just to get up, to have that determination, to have that heart, this is ghibat, this is gossip, I must get up straight away, I must move away. Or this is the article that's wrong, I must stop reading it. Because if I'm reading it, I'm a participant to that ghibat. You spoke evil of someone and you wrote it down. I'm reading it. Am I a participant to that ghibat or not? Am I listening to it? Am I reading it? Am I also sharing in that ghibat or not? Now to have that heart at that time, just close it and move on. You need willpower for that. So Allah Ta'ala blesses you also accordingly. This is that first thing that Nabi Sallam cautions us, tongue. Milaku dhalika kulli. This work will put everything together, will bond everything, all your other works, it will bond it. It will bind it together, it will secure it, it will protect it. Okay. To do that righteous work, maybe not so difficult, right? You will have some type of difficulty in doing it. But the more important thing is thereafter is to try and secure that good work. Whatever good work you have done, to try and secure it, right? You got an investment, so your fikr is all the time to secure that investment. The investment must just grow all the time. You don't open up, you don't start off an investment and just totally ignore it. No. You're looking for ways how to secure that investment of mine. It's an investment, how must I secure it? How must I see future growth? How must I see that it's always building up all the time? How must I see? So that's your fikr, that's your concern. So similarly, in the good deeds that we do, righteous works, the sawab and the nekis that we do, that should be the concern of a Muslim, that I mustn't destroy it. لا تُبْتِلُوا صَدَقَاتِكُمْ. Your good works, charity, etc. Don't go and destroy it. It's people's habit. They do some charitable work, or a favor for anybody, a friend, or a poor person, whoever it is. And then, every second, third person, they're going to, yeah, you know what, we did this favor for this person, he didn't have money for lights and all that, we saw him right, you know. Or this person, he didn't have a furniture or a fridge, we bought him something, you know. Or he didn't have a car, so I saw him right, I just helped him out, I gave him a car. So this reminders of your generosity. The Quran Sharif is saying, لا تبتلوا صدقاتكم بالمن والأذى. Don't annihilate, don't destroy, don't eliminate your works of charity, etc., with expressions of your generosity, with reminders of your generosity. Don't go and break them. So one is to acquire the good deed, and the other is to then secure it, protect it, look after it, take care of it. Don't break it. If you have done the work for Allah Ta'ala, then you don't need to advertise it. You don't need to advertise it. And if you have done it for advertisement, then don't look for sawab. One of the two. You either did it for advertisement, or you did it for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. If it is for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, then don't advertise it. How many good people you hear of? People passed away recently also, in the past also. The man passes away and you hear, mashallah, so many poor people, so many widows, so many orphans managed to take care of. Recently also someone passed away and someone says, one person, and he used to take care of so many families, 20 families, 30 families, one single person he used to take care of. And you only hear this after the man has passed away. So though outwardly he didn't seem like a pious person, ordinary person, we will think ourselves to be more pious than them. But only after they die, then do you hear, oh, he looked after so many families. He used to look after their groceries, their lights, their water, this. And they only come to know because these people come and complain now, you know, this man should look after us. And now we don't have that degree of tolerance to just keep quiet because there's lights. We need the lights, we need water, we need groceries. But for all the years this man looked after our respect. We didn't have to go and beg and borrow from anybody. He took care of our respect. So لا تبتلوا صدقاتكم بالمن والأذى. So this group of people that used to keep quiet and take care of the tongue, that group is fast vanishing, is going away. In the past, we had people that were doing this type of work, good works, whatever, but nobody, no, without any publicity, without any advertisement, without anything, they knew it, Allah Pak knew it, but sufficient, carry on. Hazrat Hamdai's words, neki kar aur darya mein phenk. Neki kar aur darya mein phenk. Do the good works and forget it. Leave it to Allah Ta'ala. It's in the sea now, it's in the ocean as though it's lost, finished, class. Allah Pak knows about it, it's sufficient. Nobody else knows about it. So you see the disaster of the tongue. How much of disaster, how much of pain, how much of problems this tongue brings. This is a famous hadith we all hear of. The shaitan, he places his throne on the seas and he takes an account, a record of all his people. What service have you rendered for the day? What service have you done? What service have you rendered from all the smaller shaitans? What have you rendered? What have you done for the day? So each person renders his account. I have done this. Alright, gives them some type of applaud. Alright. What you did, you know, what I did was, the husband and the wife, they were engaged in some brawl, and I spurred up one against the other. I spurred the husband against the wife, and the wife against the husband. The hadith is telling us, Amlik alayka lisanak, just be in control of your tongue. In most instances when there's a dispute, there's a quarrel, if you go and analyze that problem, that quarrel, whatever it is, then it is the misuse of the tongue. If one party thought, alright, let me just keep quiet, I'll just keep quiet. The other party feels, well, I'm shouting here, and that other party is just keeping quiet, is absolutely silent. See? So he'll also get tired and he'll keep quiet, he'll carry on. They only feel like continuing with this brawl, with this fight, if there's some response. But if there's no response, like you shouting at a wall, shouting, then there's no response and you carry on. Like a dog, you'll keep barking. But if he sees no response, then you'll keep quiet. So the same with insulting and abuse and swearing, etc. If one party is a little bit more intelligent, say, all right, let me keep quiet for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Not to belittle my brother. If your intention is wrong, then you don't get correct results coming out. But the intention is right. Intention is just for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, I will keep quiet. And you'll see very quickly thereafter, the things will simmer down, that man will be calm, he will go his way, you go your way. But the moment you respond, and you show to him, and you try and prove to him, that your argument can prevail over his argument, then he will try to do the same. He'll want to have the last word. Every man feels the same. I don't want to be humbled, so I want to say something. You say something, I want to say something over it. So each person feels the same. So the easy way out of this whole thing is just to keep quiet. After everything is said and done, after a day or after some time, you'll find that you will still earn more respect. The one that keeps quiet, he remains silent, he will earn greater respect. And the one that said something, he will always have that type of agony and grief. But why did I open my tongue? Why did I open my mouth? I should have just kept quiet, just walked away, did my work. I opened my tongue and I used some languages. I said some things that was not right. So that will create that type of misery, that type of turmoil in your mind. But if you just keep quiet, it's gone, finished. I'm trying to say one small joke. You know, man came to the house, and the wife is shouting one way. Some women are like that. They just enter the house, and the whole day is gusta. They have to throw it onto someone. So you, the first victim they got, they throw it onto you. So the whole day is gusta and anger she accumulated. The husband came, and she's giving it to him. So the husband, in that state of despair and despondency, he says, Ya Allah Ta'ala, Ya to me mar jau. So she picked up the veil and says, Ya to me mar jau, Ya to. So he says, Ya Allah Ta'ala, Ya to me mar jau, Ya to phir me hi mar jau. So the easy way is just to keep quiet. What do you lose? Tumhara kya jata hai? Tum khamosh rahe, to tumhara kya jata hai? Tumhara kya bigarta hai? Just keep quiet, finish, let them have the last say and carry on. Eventually, if you have that attitude, you'll find that person will feel embarrassed. He will come asking for maafi to you. He will come to ask you for an apology. But if you want to have the last say and he wants to have the last say, then it's not going to end up. You'll fight with him today, tomorrow you'll get him again. Now, I forgot to tell him this much. Something else will come to your mind. I should have told him this also. Then the second day, let me write it to him. Then he's going to write also. So, no, I thought about something else also. From another perspective, let me look at it. I'll get him again. So then you'll be like lawyers, how they carry on. No end. Because, for every letter, they're getting 300 rands. So they're not looking at the wording, they're looking at the 300 rands that's coming with that letter, you see. So it'll be like that. At least that lawyer is still all right. He's getting something for it. He's not getting anything. Inka to kuch kaam banta hai, aur aapka to kuch nahi banta. That's why I say that we should look at the lives of our Buzurgan Adeem. If you don't look at their lives, I tell you, it will be difficult for you to understand the hadith. Mark my words. Even the Quran Sharif, it becomes difficult. If you don't look at the life of the Aslaf, of the pious people of the past, you can't understand hadith application. You can't understand how. We may think that we understand and we know application. We'll only understand the application after we see them. We understand them, we see them closely, read about them, and regularly. Like this Kitab Abbiti, I read it about 3 or 4 times. And I hear, after that, I hear some senior, very senior ulama, some Shaykhul Hadith, etc., they read about 6-7 times the same kitab. Now, why they see the need to do it? To see application, how did our Buzurgan, and how did they apply themselves in different situations? Yahya Sahib, rahmatullahi, is the Shaykh's father, or Ilyas's elder brother, and his ustad. Ilyas's ustad, and his elder brother. And a great confidant of Mawla Gangohi rahmatullahi. So everybody, all the Buzurgs in that zamana, they respected Mawla Yahya for that. For 14 years, he served Mawla Gangohi rahmatullahi. So everybody held him in esteem and respect. Even Mawla Thanvi rahmatullahi, Mawla Shaykhulin, everybody held him in that type of esteem and respect. So he used to have a small kutubkhana, small kitab shop. And he had a person working for him, Munshi Muhammad Hussein, right? Wasn't a worker, but a friend, and he would come and help Maulana. As a friend, he would come and help. So one person came into the shop, and he started swearing Maulana. He says, "Maulana Yahya," and he started giving Maulana. So I looked at him for just 1 second, and then he carried on with his work. That person, whatever he had to swear, he swore, he swore, he swore, and he carried on. That person came for the second day, and he did the same thing. And Maulana Yahya, on his end, he continued with his work. Third day, he did the same thing. He swore, he came, and used abusive languages. And he went away. Now this Munshi Muhammad said he couldn't stand it. He said, "Maulana, hey, this is not right, man. This is not right. This person is hurling so much of abuse and insult, and you're just keeping quiet about the whole thing. Can't you say anything? You haven't got a mouth, you haven't got a tongue." So Maulana Yahya looked at him for a second, and he carried on. So he became very angered at this. "Are you treating me like how you treated that person? That person hurled abuse, and you ignored him, so you're ignoring me also." So he became enraged. He became angry about the whole thing. When he became really angry, so Maulana told him, "See, you got a tongue and you got a mouth, right? So you can answer. I don't have that tongue and I don't have that type of mouth, so leave me." But now you see this type of life, this type of incidents. If you don't read them, then you don't understand. فَمَنْ أَفَى وَأَصْلَحَ فَأَجْرُهُ عَلَى اللَّهِ وَجَزَاءُ سَيِّئَةٍ سَيِّئَةٌ مِثْلَهَا فَمَنْ أَفَى وَأَصْلَحَ فَأَجْرُهُ عَلَى اللَّهِ مَنْ تَرَكَ الْمِرَاءَ وَهُوَ مُحِقٌّ بُنِيَ لَهُ بَيْتٌ فِي رَبَدِ الْجَنَّةِ. Now all these hadiths, these ayahs of the Quran Sharif will come into your mind after you have seen these Buzurgan al-Din, after you have heard of them. Otherwise, only one thing will come. جَزَاءُ سَيِّئَةٍ سَيِّئَةٌ مِثْلُهَا فَمَنِ اَعْتَدَى عَلَيْكُمْ فَاَعْتَدُوا عَلَيْهِ بِمِثْلِ مَا اَعْتَدَى عَلَيْكُمْ. Only the one thing will come into your mind. The other side of it, that how these people acted and how they applied the Quran Sharif, that will not appeal to you. It won't appeal to you. What seems enjoyable, that will appeal. And what doesn't seem, you don't seem to be curry favor with it, so you don't, it doesn't appeal with you. So the shaitan, he takes that account, he takes that record, you know, how you take kalguzari, stock, see. So shaitan also sees the need to take stock. Do you see how important it is to take stock? Hazrat Rahmatullah used to say, before sleeping, you take stock of yourself. Hal adullukum ala tijarat. This whole life is a business. And the business can only function well if you take stock. If you don't take stock, you're going down. You don't know whether you're coming or you're going. One person came, and he's asking about dinosaurs and, you know, what that other thing, that unidentified flying objects. UFO, yeah. UFO and all big fancy things he was talking about. This planet and that star and what. So I asked him, "Bhaiya, how many qaza namaz has you got still?" 5 years qaza namaz. Bhai, go and uska tikana karo, isko sahi karo. If you die today, Allah Pak won't ask you about UFO, don't ask you about dinosaur, nothing he'll ask you about. He'll ask you about that 5 year qaza namazes. So jo karne ki cheez hai, wo to karo. You don't do these things, and you fall into all these stupid things after that. There's no sawal, no hisab for it. Actually, when I told him this much, that day he felt bad. But after that he says, "Mona, I feel very relieved, man. I feel very, very relieved." Good person. Though very educated person, very, very educated person. But he said, "I felt very relieved." I said, "Why, what makes you feel relieved?" So he says that, "I used to always fear this UFOs and all that. There's something that's invading the earth. Anytime they're going to come and attack. I'm sleeping and thinking, oh, this thing is going to come." But when he told me, "But forget about this. Worry about your qaza namaz, etc." My mind went to a different tangent. I forgot about all these things here. So the things that we need to do, that's the priority. Qaza namaz is right, or your qaza namaz is right. I'm not reciting with tajweed. At least get the right tajweed, you know, the main alphabets, qaf, ayn, ha. Get that right. So no, I'm not going to finish with all that. Now I'm going to find out Nuh alayhi salam and his ship, how long it was, what was the breadth, what was the length, how many people came inside the ship. Allah Pak is not going to ask all these things. Get the priorities right. What Allah Pak is going to ask you, then you do these type of things. Other things, leave it out. People have a lot of time and they think that their lives are long and Malakul Maut will give them time to prepare. Leave that for them. But you got no time limit. Malakul Maut didn't give you any time limit that I'm coming at this time. So you prepare yourself. Let him carry on wasting his time. But you look after, you take care of yourself. So this shaitan, he takes that account, you see. So I'm saying how important it is to take an account. What I did, what did I speak of? How do I relate? How do I conduct myself? Was I supposed to say this? I read this article here. That the type of feelings that ran through my mind because of me reading this article. Should I read this article or not? Do I find, when I read this type of books or this type of articles, then do I find the desired feeling in my heart? See, the Quran Sharif says, إِذَا تُلِيَتْ عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتُ زَادَتْهُمْ إِيمَانًا. When the Quran Sharif is recited, then the iman is increasing. Quran is recited, hadith, then you find them tearing, the hearts are affected, the yaqeen is growing. So you're reading this, is your yaqeen growing? Is your yearning for the hereafter increasing? Is the fear for Allah Ta'ala increasing? These are all now the criteria for you to read something. If these things are not happening, then it's a waste of time. Why are you reading that article? Don't leave it. Leave it for someone else. Someone else will do that. Don't use deen as an entertainment, you see. Today, that's also a problem, you see. Sitting in the car now, put on tape. Going to work, put on tape. Now you become so immune to these lectures and waaz, bayan, etc. that it doesn't have the effect in your heart after that. You listen to that bayan, whatever bayan it is, or that kitab, 1 hour, and read it with proper attention, focus, etc. You'll see a good impression. You'll be impressed with it. Good feelings, good influence will come onto you. But you read it as a pastime, just carry on reading, listening, here, there, anytime, every time. See? Then that type of effect that it needed to have, it doesn't have. Then you become immune. Radio whole day, from the morning to the evening, whole day that radio is carrying on. So it's got no asar, no effect at all. You rather listen to it 1 hour. Some pious person is giving a talk, whatever, you listen to it half an hour, 1 hour, whatever is your attention span. Look at your attention span. Right? Someone's attention span is lesser. Overall, it's about 45 minutes. That's what they say. Attention span is about 45 minutes. So 45 minutes you listen, or you read, and then leave it. Leave it out afterwards. Don't become immune. This is why the Quran Sharif is saying, إِذَا تُلِيَتْ عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتُ زَادَتْهُمْ إِيمَانًا. Then when the verses are recited, hadith is recited, then the iman increases. They begin to weep. The yaqeen strengthens. They want to do something. The yearning for Allah Ta'ala for the hereafter increases. The outlook and the recognition of Allah Ta'ala betters. So this is the thing we need to read. This is the thing we need to listen to. So then shaitan, I say, he takes that account and the record, you see. And we need to take record as well. As I say, that aqil, hushyar aadmi kon hai? Ke shaitan se bhi sabak leta hai. See, shaitan, instead of the shaitan exploiting you exploit the shaitan. Shaitan, you're taking that account and you're seeing your business is progressing. So I see now how to progress that business, I see. This is how you progress business, you take a stock of yourself. So if you can do it, why can't I do it? You're doing business, I'm doing business as well. One person saw the shaitan, you see. And he says, shaitan, I want to know one secret from you. One secret. I want to become like you, tell me. How must I become like you? See, shaitan also can't see what's inside your heart, inside your mind, what's playing your deep intentions, he doesn't know. So, he played a trick with the shaitan, and he's asking shaitan, I want to become your friend, man. How must I become your pal or your friend? How must I get it right? Only two things. One is, you must speak lies and don't look after your tongue. What? Don't look after your tongue. Swear and speak lies and all that, you know. Don't look after your tongue. And the second thing is, don't perform your namaz on time. One is, misuse the tongue, abuse the tongue. And number two is, don't perform your namaz on time. So he said, Shaitan, this is a mistake he made. He said, Shaitan, wallah, I will never falter in these two things. I will never falter in these two things. I'll never make a mistake in two things. Misuse of the tongue or procrastinating and delaying in namaz. So Shaitan said also, wallah, up till today nobody had deceived me. You're the first person to deceive me. And nobody will ever share my secret. I say, he made a mistake. He should have just kept quiet. Because if you also met Shaitan, you could have taken out something else from him. So, when we look at things positively, you can take out work from Shaitan as well. See? So, Shaitan asked that other Shaitan, small Shaitan now, what business you did today? So, no, I caught them fighting, husband and wife. Caught them fighting. You also got a tongue, you can also speak. You also can speak, you know also English. You also went to school and university, you can also speak. You can also write. So why must you keep quiet? If you can write, why must you keep quiet? You must also speak. You must also say your side of it. You're dumb, what? So Shaitan will spur you, spur her also. Nobody will think, nobody will have the tawfiq to keep quiet. The whole secret is just to keep quiet. Keep quiet and do your work. Just keep quiet and do your work. Engage in your work. They'll, if the wife or anybody else, they'll get used to your style and they'll stop all that slander, that abuse. So here I got both of them abusing each other, slandering, abusing each other, until the husband once, he flipped, you know, he couldn't take it any longer, and he divorced. Now she's gone at home, to her mother's place. They were about 4 or 5 children, so 2 or 3 children he took, and 2 or 3 children they took, the wife took away. So there's so many fights that are carrying on. The first fight is the fight for custody. Now they're in the courts, and this fight for custody. See? So in that whole fight, what's happening? The mother is trying to show more affection to the child, and the father is trying to show more affection to the child. Overall, what's happening? You are creating a monster for yourself. See? So that in that fight for custody, you are trying to give in to every demand of the child. So yeh uski tarbiyat ke liye behtar hai, for his growing up, proper growing up and nurturing, is it the better thing or is it going to be destructive? So for that custody, they do everything. Right? And she's got her circle of friends, he's got his circle of friends. He's hurling abuse, insult against her, and she's doing the same. He's making ghibat of her, and she's making ghibat of him. He's gossiping and making wrong stories, false allegations against her, and she is doing the same thing against him. Then, apart, it doesn't end up there. Apart from that, both families are not talking. For personal reasons, they're not talking to each other. So, this misuse of the tongue and this marital problem, see, what it is? It is a jungle of problems. What? It's a jungle. Shaitan finds, you'll find every type of species of animal there. Every animal of destruction you'll find. You'll find rebirth, you'll find gossip, you'll find bohtan, you'll find slander. And then after that, both of them, whether it is the wife or the husband, both of them, emotions and feelings are not dead. Before, when they were together, feelings went high, they could satisfy themselves. Now they are separated. So he'll go in a haram way, she's going to go in a haram way. So it's a whole jungle of sin. It's a whole jungle of sin. And then those children that will be born from all this, then you can imagine what type of feelings, inclinations those children will have. So Shaitan gives him a big, large, big, huge embrace. You know, you are my vicegerent. You are supposed to be my deputy. You have fulfilled the task, you know, whatever you were representing me, and this represented, you have represented me fairly, correctly. You have fulfilled that duty, that office. So this tongue and the care of the tongue, misuse of the tongue, Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq.